Hello and welcome to the Selfish Podcast. Today we have a last minute guest, Dawn Menge, and I'm so grateful for her for coming on in such short notice. So thank you, Dawn. Can you just share with the audience where in the world you are and what time of day is it for you?
Oh, well, thank you for having me. I live in Southern California in the United States, and it's 6 o'clock in the morning here.
Oh, that's great. Thank you so much for coming on so early as well. It really works out with the time zone difference. And I really love in this time that we can just connect in such an instant. I think it's a beautiful thing. We actually met on a Facebook group for podcasts. So it was great to be able to use that technology to get someone to connect in such an instant. Have you been on podcasts before?
Yeah, this is my 89th interview, I believe.
Got 89. You've done a lot more than me.
well
done. Congratulations.
I'm a teacher, so when we went into the pandemic and started teaching at home, I started doing the interviews, and so I've been having a really great time talking to people all over the world.
Yeah, it's amazing, isn't it? Just to be able to, like, when I was younger, and I'm not too old now, I'm 35, but when I was in my like teens, we weren't able to connect with people. And the idea of a pen pal was fascinating to me. I never had one, but to connect to someone in a different country was beautiful. And now we're doing it in an instant. So it's amazing.
Yeah. It's very interesting to talk to everyone from around the world and all the different perspectives. And I do a lot of discussions about, I teach special education. So I do a lot of discussions about our students and what we do with our students in comparison to what other countries are doing.
Oh, interesting. Yeah, that's fascinating because, like you say, you can all learn from each other and grow from each other.
Yes.
Yeah. What I'd like to do is know more about you personally and your life and your story. So can you just like paint me a picture of what life was like pre 10 years old, where you grew up, what your parents did?
I grew up in a small mountain community, which is where I actually live right now. And we moved up here for my health, actually. I had asthma. And we had an amazing time when we were growing up. At the time, we, of course, did not realize that and thought everybody grew up like that. But we got to go skiing during our school day. And, of course, we did a lot of hiking in the mountains. My father was an engineer at General Dynamics, and my mom was a kindergarten teacher.
Oh, nice. And so you got to go into nature, like, from such a young age. Do you have siblings? Did you have brothers and sisters?
I have an older brother, and I have a younger brother.
Oh, nice. And what was school life for you? How was school?
Oh, well, I did not like school. I moved up here when I was in the fifth grade. And on Wednesdays, they would actually close the school down, and we would go up to the ski hill and go skiing. And I'm a children's author too. So every year I do the Young Authors Conference, where the students in the district, they write books, and then the ones that are chosen get published, and they have like a ceremony, and I get to take my books and the children read their stories to me. But when I go back to the elementary school to do this event, everything is so small. when you're little and you're running through the hallway, it seems huge. But, everything's small. The restrooms are small. And it's like, wow, when I was little, this seems so huge and so impressive. But it's a lot of fun to go back and talk to the children who are growing up in the same environment that I did and read their stories and what they're writing about. And then when we got into junior high and high school, we did not have a school. So we were bused probably 35, 40 minutes. And then when I got into the ninth grade, they actually built a school for us. And so it was ninth grade, the 12th grade. And I believe there might've been 500 students total. It was very small. There was only 80 children in our graduating class. And my older brother actually was the first person in the class to graduate.
So, oh, really? Oh, fascinating.
Yeah. So it was very small. And so everybody knew each other. And we used to have a wall. There's like two blocks. The town's only like two blocks big. And we would have a wall at the top of the town. And we would hang out at this wall and just sit there and watch the visitors that would come to the village, and we would call them Flatlanders. And they would come up and we would just sit there all day and walk around the mountains. And we could actually ski to the ski hill. And when we were teenagers, almost all of us worked at the ski hill in some capacity. And so it was really nice. And we did, I was a ski instructor. And actually, the smaller ski hill was owned by a local family. And in the summertime, they would let us come up, all ages, and we would work to get it ready for this skiing. So we would paint, or we would take the rocks off the courses, put the hay down, and we would earn our ski passes. So that's, oh, that nice. Was, yeah, it was really neat. It was, and you know, almost all the children in the town who skied did this. So we were all, you know, really close actually.
And do you still ski now?
I'm almost 60, so I don't ski anymore. It's cold, you know, and I did it a lot. You know, when we were teenagers, we used to, you know, ride on the chairlift, and it snowed a lot more back then. And we would like jump off the chairlift and things. So when I was pregnant, I have three children. When I was pregnant with my second child, I actually had a dream that I fell off the ski chair, and I was never really able to be comfortable again in a ski, you know, riding up in the chairlift. I can still ski. I just can't get up in the chairlift. So I'm more of an observer now.
Oh, okay. Interesting. That all stemmed from a dream that it built that fear. Yeah.
And I tried. I couldn't get past it. I did try.
And do you remember what your like earliest ambition was, something you wanted to do, be or become, like when you was at the youngest you can remember?
When I was getting ready to graduate, you know, I did not like high school. I wanted to drop out every year, and I stayed there, got, you know, and graduated, but I wanted to own a business. I wanted to be a businesswoman. I was not going to stay home and take care of my children. You know, I wasn't going to be a stay-at-home mom. And of course, about 6 months after I graduated from high school, I met my husband, and I stayed home with our children. So I did the exact opposite of what I said I was going to do. But I'm really glad I got that opportunity to stay home with them and raise them. You know, my girls all work. And so they've had their children and they've all worked. And I really admire that they're able to balance all of that out. But I know how hard it is for them to leave, you know, the babies.
Yeah. Yeah, it was interesting. When I was younger, I sort of, I always wanted to work and get into business. But at the same time, I always like envisioned having children and I wanted to be with them all the time. And in my mind, I was like, how can I work and have a child with me in my work? And it was like trying to build that idea always. I haven't got children yet, but I still plan to one day, and I want to spend as much time with them as possible.
Yes.
And when you were saying school was hard, what was, not hard, but you didn't want to be there. What did you not like? Was it you just wanted to get into the workforce, or was there something else?
I just kind of wanted to get on with my life. I don't know, maybe because it was so small, everyone knew each other. I don't really know why I didn't like it, because I've gone on, you know, obviously to get my PhD, so I'm able to handle school. I think I just wanted to be out and skiing. I played volleyball. I think that kept me in school. I loved volleyball. And then when I was a junior in high school, I actually was in a car accident. And I spent most of my junior year, I broke my femur and my sternum and my pelvis. So I spent most of my junior year in the hospital or in a cast. And so I missed that. And, you know, I just wanted to get on with my life.
Okay. And what comes to mind first when I say, like, what was your earliest struggle in life?
Well, I would say was probably recovering from the car accident. I was pretty traumatic. But it taught me to be strong, and that life is short, and to go out and, you know, and reach your dreams and work for them.
Yeah. And I imagine, like you said, there's just a year sort of in and out of hospital, and it's a lot of just stationary for a lot of time, especially when you've had a life of exploring and being able to sort of adventure. Did you find anything in that time that gave you strength? Was anything you did or anything at all that gave you strength during that time to keep going?
Well, I learned how to crochet and I made a lot of blankets during that time. And I had some really great friends who would, so my mom could go to work. They would come and stay with me when I was home. I was in a half a body cast, so I was in a wheelchair. And they would come and stay with me and keep me company so my mom could go teach. And I know I did my schoolwork. I know I just learned how to crochet and do some things because a friend of mine came to visit me in the hospital. And for some reason, I remember this. The doctor came in, so they had to leave the room. And the ball of yarn went rolling down the hallway of the hospital. I don't know why. Maybe it just seemed funny at the time. And I just really remember that. So I did a lot of the crocheting. And I remember the nurse telling me, you know, you're really nice right now when it first started. I'm going to give you about a week. And she said, you're just going to, you know, have a really hard time with, because they put pins in my legs and they had anchors to pull the bone so it would line up. And I stayed there for about 6 weeks. And she said, you know, for 6 weeks doing that, being 16 years old, that's, you know, that's not where you want to be. And I was about an hour from my house. So my parents actually drove every single day. I really admire, now being a parent and all that, I really admire what they were doing because they were working and then coming down. And at one point I actually stopped eating because who wants to eat hospital food for 6 weeks?
Yeah.
So they would bring me a hamburger. And so that's actually one of my my defaults, even as an adult, is hamburgers. So, you know, that kind of stuck with me.
Yeah, no, it was really interesting. Like you said, to be so young as well, to go through something so traumatic. And like you said, and now that's given you a sort of a perspective for life itself. And you think that's a main cause? What really has driven you? It sounds like you was driven anyway, like you wanted to be in a business and you wanted to do things. But you feel like that time, even though you were stationary then, it's sort of like giving you a force to actually go harder now and through the rest of your life.
Yeah, I think so, because you know, when you're a teenager, you're just kind of bopping around and, you know, checking out the world. And, you know, I learned really fast that, you know, life is hard and things happen and you have to fight through it. And, you know, I had to start once I was in a smaller cast, I went back to school and then I had to, I remember that summer, I spent the whole summer walking to the ski lift, which is about 3 or 4 miles to build up my strength because I loved playing volleyball. I couldn't play volleyball after that. That was the one thing. So my senior year, I didn't get to play volleyball. And that might have been why I didn't really want to stay in school because I really loved it. And I still did ski though, but I worked at a camp. We have a Methodist camp up here. So in the summertime, I would cook and I would cook these huge pots of tuna casserole and stuff. And so I did that for several years and I would walk to work. And so we loved being outside and they actually told me that I wouldn't be able to have children. They didn't think I would be because of the injuries that I had. And I went ahead and had 3 children and now I have 6 grandchildren. So
Was there fear when you actually got pregnant the first time?
I was a high risk. I also had some thyroid issues, but they all came out very healthy and they all have their own families and they're out conquering their worlds and I'm really proud of them. So it all worked out really good.
Yes. Oh, nice. And what you said, you got a doctorate and you became an author. Can you just walk me through the process of what sort of age and what led you to want to pursue that further education?
Well, when my children became school age, I went back to college. And when I first got married, I didn't think about going to college. I just thought, well, maybe I'll be a preschool teacher when I raise my kids. So my husband and I went back to college together. He was a fireman. And I took a class where you can get credit for volunteering. And I worked in my mom's kindergarten classroom. And I got to take my 2 little girls with me. And so she trained me to be a teacher. So I went on from there, and while I was getting my credential, I teach students with severe cognitive delays. One of my assignments was to write a math book and a math game. So that's what I did. I wrote a math book. It's based on the days of the week, the months of the years, and the first version was about my students. And we actually took them around to the elementary schools in our area, and my students performed like a skit. And then I would go back the next day and I would explain their behaviors, their disabilities, answer any questions the children had. We did that for 3 or 4 years. We did that. I got a grant through a college. And then I decided that I wanted to publish it. So I named it after my grandmother, who is an astute businesswoman. She actually founded a credit union, her and her dad, going door to door to get their members and to build up their membership. And she was a world traveler. So it's called Queen Vernita's Visitors. And everyone in the book is, they were the children in our family. And I put my dad in there who had passed away at that time. Because I thought, well, they're just kids. They're not going to, you know, notice that they're in this book. And I was only publishing the one book. You know, that's as far as I'd gotten. Mm. And I immediately started winning awards and getting interviews. And people were asking me, well, what's your next book? And I'm like, I don't know. You know, and so I love to travel. So we decided that the queen was going to travel around her kingdom and talk about the different areas. So now I'm publishing my 13th book. And it's won over 70 international awards. And so I'm just having a really great time doing it.
Oh, wow. So that's fascinating. And it seems like you wasn't even looking to be an author in any way at all.
No.
And you were just directed in that way.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's nice. And what kind of feeling did you get when you first published your book and got sort of recognition for it?
Well, my publisher recommended it to the Evie Awards, which is out of Colorado. And I got first place. And I was just like, what? You know, it wasn't something I even thought about, winning an award. And it really actually spurred me on, because when I published, I didn't think about publicizing my book or doing book events. I actually was very shy and was having a hard time at first getting out there. And when I would do interviews, I would have the characters, because they're all real people. So I would have the characters in my book do the interviews with me, you know, and talk about being in the book and how much, if they liked it and what it was like, the experience. And I remember that I did one of my first in-person events. It was at the library. And the local TV station was walking by talking to all of the authors. And I'm like, I'm not going to do that. And I actually tried to hide in the bathroom when it was going to be my turn. And the ladies next to me, they had these science books. And they said, if you're going to be an author, you're going to have to learn to do this. So they encouraged me to stay there. And I stayed there and I did the interview. And it wasn't as bad as I thought. But it is hard. It's hard to get out there. It's hard to, especially if you're more introverted. It's hard. So that's one thing I started doing when we started with the pandemic and the lockdown. We were at home teaching. So I started doing a lot of podcasts and all over the world. And this is, I believe it's my 89th. And it's been fascinating talking to people all over the world. I've talked to India and New Zealand and Sweden and Australia and Jamaica. And of course, Canada and the UK. And a lot of the conversations end up being about my students and our teaching methods, because every country approaches our students a little differently.
Yeah, no, that's really fascinating. And I've got so many questions, but I wanted to get back to the author side, because that's something that I'm really interested in myself. I've always wanted to publish books and put pen to paper. I just love writing and creating, but non-fiction sort of creations. And what would you say, what's it been like? How many years have you been a published author now, and how have you noticed that a change in the sort of author world?
I started in 2008, and I didn't research publishing companies or anything. I didn't submit it for traditional publishing because it wasn't my intent to like really be an author. So what I did was, because I write children's books, I joined the Society of Children's Book Writers and Illustrators. And that is one of the best things that I ever did. I went to their conferences, their workshops, met some amazing people. They're so nice. You could be sitting in a room with New York Times bestselling authors or people who have written a book for 10 years and still haven't published it. They just haven't. It takes a lot of it takes bravery to put your thoughts out in the world and to be criticized or critiqued. And so they haven't quite braved that. And it's just fascinating. And that was the best thing that I did. Then I met some people from, it's called the Story Monster Magazine. And they're from a different state. So I spent a lot of time traveling there and doing events with them. I now write book reviews for them. I judged three of their literacy contests. And they were just a great support. Always encouraging. Going to these events with them has always been just, you meet the neatest people. I was sitting next to one, the last in-person event that we were able to do. I was sitting next to a man and he was just illustrating away. He was one of the illustrators and he works for Marvel Comics. And It's like, wow, you know, you meet people that are really out there and they're just nice. You know, you don't expect them to be, but they are. They're just nice and they're encouraging and everyone encourages each other. And so if you want to write a book, if you want to get out there, join organizations with other writers. There's usually always critiquing groups within your local community. So you could contact, like, the library would have a list of the groups, and go to those and get encouragement from the other writers. Find out what they're doing. And you read your stories and they critique them. They give you thoughts and ideas. You don't have to take them, but it's always nice to hear what other people who are published and have been out there for a while, their experiences. They can tell you a lot about what to do, where to go, who to talk to. Definitely networking is a good opportunity for anyone who's not quite sure and just wants to kind of put their toe in it first.
Yeah. Yeah. I actually had a guest on, I don't know how many episodes ago it was now. It was a little while ago. And she's a specialist in crowdfunding for authors. And she was just saying how, like, that's picked up so much, especially during the pandemic. And she says she mainly concentrates on children book authors. And she says she's just noticed that people that are the authors for children books, she goes, are just the nicest people she's ever met. And that's why she loves working with them so much. And it sounds like you've had a similar experience.
Yeah, I know a lot of the authors that I know do that. And I'm like, I want to try that. I haven't tried it yet. Because they do say it is a lot of work. And I'm still teaching and doing, I lecture sometimes at the local university. And I'm now on a lot of committees. I just was asked, there's a group, it's called Hindi's Libraries, and it's out of New York. And they donate books all over the world now. India and Africa, they donated books to build a library in Africa. They were just on the Today Show the other day. And about 2 weeks ago, they asked me to be on their board. And I'm doing things that I never thought I would be doing. But what I did when I went to one of the conferences, there's an author, his name is Kwame Alexander, and he did a speech, and I was kind of discouraged at that time, very tired. It was the last speech of the conference. And I said, well, you know, I want to stay. So I actually had to sit on the floor in the back of the room. It was so full of authors and publishers. But he has a speech he calls Yes. And he talks about, and that's one thing I really loved about going to the conferences. You have these authors that are having movies made out of their books. And like I said, they're New York Times bestselling authors. They're Newbery Award winners. And they talk about the struggle. It's not easy. And one lady actually, she taped all of her rejections and her husband and her put it all the way across the stage. That's how many she had. And now she was getting a movie made out of her book. So it's really tenacity and to keep going out there. But he has a speech called Yes. And he said, you say yes to the opportunities that you have. And one opportunity leads to another, leads to another, leads to another. And so I started doing that. And he's the only person I've ever written to who I thanked for, you know, kind of giving me that little push I needed and validating what I was doing in my life. And so that's what I do. If I see an opportunity and I can do it, I'll volunteer for it. Hey, let's try that. And so I've become a literary judge, a book reviewer. Now I'm on a board, you know, all sorts of things that I never thought I would be doing.
Yeah, that's really nice. And well, you said you got grandchildren and you do children's books. So did they grow up reading or having your books read to them?
They're actually in my books. So my books are all based on my actual adventures, and our family travels a lot together. So they're in all of the books, and I believe they read them, but it's not really something we actually talk about when we're together as a family. You know, cause we're busy camping, or I have one that I wrote. We took a train ride from Williams, Arizona to the Grand Canyon. And then afterwards we went on the Polar Express. And when I first started writing the book, I was going to write it on the Grand Canyon, but I needed more pre-K books to do the readings because the other books, they're too long to read during a school reading. So I made it pre-K to first grade, and it actually has a picture of my grandson who fell asleep in Santa's lap, and that's the cover of the book. And yeah, so they're in all the books. So they know when we go somewhere, I'm thinking, okay, I'm going to make a book out of this. What are we going to talk about? And I have my students in my books and my friends. And so they're all very personal.
Yeah, no, that's really fascinating. I'm looking forward to checking your books out afterwards and seeing a bit more. What's the eldest grandchild you have? How old are they?
My oldest is 18. She just turned 18, and she's graduating from the high school that I graduated from, that her mother graduated from, and she's graduating just in a few months.
Oh, nice. And because she's that bit older, has she asked questions? Like when was she first featured in your book? What age would she have been?
Oh, gosh. See, she might have been 7. She was little.
Has she brought it up to talk to you about being in the book, or it's just not come up?
Yeah, she actually was December. Her birthday's in December. When I started putting everybody in the month of their birthday. And then as I got more books out, that was a little harder to do. But so she was in December, the first 3 or 4 books that I had. And we do talk about it. She actually asked if she could do some interviews with me. We just haven't been able to connect to do that because she's busy with her school.
Yeah.
And she was in the color guard. And so she, you know, she's busy with her life. But, you know, people ask me, is this like a subject that you guys talk about? And we don't. When we're together, I might say, okay, this is what I'm doing with my books, or this is where, you know, because they're featured in my books, I have pictures of them. I will show them, okay, you were in this article or that article, but you know, they're not really concerned with it. And they've gone to my book signings with me and been involved, but you know, they're almost in their 40s now. And my newest granddaughter was just born in July, and her mom's a nurse. And so I have 6 months to 18 as grandchildren. And so we're all just really busy just being together. So we don't really discuss the books a lot.
Yeah, nice. And you said you go camping a lot. Is it normally like in tents or cabins, or do you have a camper van?
None of us have a camper van, but all of my children have the tents you put on top of the car.
Okay. Yeah, I've seen them.
Yeah. They have all that. Now they're starting to buy trailers. So one of my daughter just bought a tent trailer. My other son is going to buy a trailer. So he should have it in a few months. And then my daughter has actually 2 of the tent things that she puts on top of the cars. I would be afraid to walk on top of that. I don't know why they like that so much, but we do that. We have been in tents. And sometimes we get cabins because it's a whole family thing. So my mom goes, and she's in her 80s. And so she goes, but she'll still do a tent. And sometimes with the babies, the tents are kind of hard. But during the pandemic, my older daughter set up camping trips every month so we could spend time together. So we went to the Grand Canyon and Zion and the Sequoias and a lot to San Diego, where we would go camping together and just have a lot of fun together. And so they're actually going, I wrote a book. Every year we go up to Central Coast of California to a beach called Halama Beach. And we would all go up there once a year. We usually went for my mom and my brother's birthday in September. And we just had a great time. There'd probably be 20 of us there. And you camp right on the beach, and they have the best burgers in the whole world there. But I just wrote a book on it, and they're actually going in a couple weeks. They're going to go up there and go camping. I'm not able to go this time, but so I'm really sad I missed that one. But I'm going to go on a couple more camping trips. But yeah, we really love going out there and just loving life.
Yeah, and it's so nice you do it as such a big family sort of unit, because I think that family is just one of them structures that's so important. But to be able to get yourself into a nice natural environment and away from everything is just such an experience. Like, you may not know, because we only connected yesterday, but I live full-time in a van traveling, so I'm always as immersed in nature as possible. But that was my sort of solace, that was my place when I was younger. I had a really traumatic upbringing, and my parents were separated, but my dad would take me away camping, and that was like heaven compared to the rest of the week, and it really like saved me. And it's so beautiful to be in nature, and I think that's what drives me now, to just enjoy being out in nature as much as possible.
Oh, that's neat. And you said you were in Spain right now.
Yeah, I'm in Spain. I've been in Spain for quite a while. I didn't intend to go traveling. My partner actually got really ill, and we came out for some alternative care quite a few years ago now, like 6 years ago. She was told she would never. She had a cardiac arrest at 29 years old, and then she was wheelchair bound and heavily medicated on morphine and loads of other drugs. And the doctor said that I'm her full-time carer now, basically, and she's going to die within 5 years and she'll never walk again. And the morphine and the lack of oxygen she had from the cardiac arrest had caused her mild brain damage as well. And anyway, long story short, we was driven to go to a different alternative care and lose our business, sell our house, do everything we could to just find a different way. And it's now just over, now I think it's just turned 7 years later, and not only is she still alive, she's medication free and she can walk and talk and her memory's back. And yeah, we're only just really getting life started again now.
Oh, wow. So you've had challenges and you've really fought through them.
Yeah, I've learned to embrace the challenges. It was very difficult because my life has always been like traumatic from young. My mom had severe schizophrenia from when I was a young child. So I became her full-time carer with my brother. But we would have the most strangest upbringing when we were younger, and so much we lived off food packages. We had time without lots of food and lived in poverty, and just it was constant trauma. And I was suicidal from like 7 years old. Then suffered depression for like 20 years. And it's only been in the last, it's actually the event with my love Danielle that I sort of had a breakthrough. I had my last suicidal thought like 7 years ago, and something just changed within me, and like my whole life just changed. And I started sharing online. I started the podcast recently just to connect with others, because I just had a different outlook on life and a different zest for life, you know, and loving life no matter what happens.
Well, maybe her becoming ill, you know, you learn, you know, that other people really need you, and you were able to help her because of your upbringing, because a lot of people wouldn't have stuck around for, you know, sadly.
Yeah, no, and that's what I get off a lot of people. I'm like, what do you mean you wouldn't stick around? To me, it's just like, that's your responsibility. But then that was imprinted in me from my responsibility looking after my mother for so many years.
There was a reason that you lived, that your childhood was like that.
Yeah.
If it wasn't, then she wouldn't be here probably.
Yeah, I always say my mum's my greatest gift. And years ago, I never thought I would say that, because I thought it was my biggest curse. No, and I think life is like that. Some things we think are our worst thing are our best thing. But yeah,
is she still around?
She passed away. What month is it now? She passed away a couple months ago. So it was a very odd experience for me to go through, because I was working my way. I really wanted to care for her full time on a piece of land and have her in a different place. And she died in hospital, in a mental hospital. She fell over and banged her head and died. And but I was in such a good place. I was able to handle it really well and just be so appreciative for all the time and everything I did have with her and all the lessons that she's taught me and gifted me. And it was just such a strange feeling, because I had that responsibility for so long, and for that to be taken was overwhelming, but in an actual beautiful way, because I didn't want it to happen, but it was a element of freedom that I've never experienced. So it was a very surreal experience to go through.
Yeah, my older brother actually has schizophrenia, and he went through high school, and he was, you know, we had no signs of it. And when he went to college, it manifested, and came out, and it was really rough because we didn't have any experiences with that. And I know how hard, I'd just gotten married when the episodes were happening, and it was really rough on my parents. You know, we didn't know what was going on, and he's stable now. He lives in a home, but it's been rough. He's had a lot of medical problems, and it's hard on him because he graduated from college, and he actually had a job working with my dad, and he just couldn't maintain it with what was happening. So we do have experiences with that, and know how hard it is for my mom to, she wants him to have the best life, but we're not able to care for him at home.
Yeah, it's an incredibly difficult thing to try and manage. And like you said, and it's the most painful thing sometimes is the suffering that the witnesses go through, who actually loves the person more sometimes than them. Like I saw my mom sometimes laughing her head off, and she looked like she's having a really great time, but it was abstract and it was causing me pain because I could see it didn't fit in quite right with what the environment and what's actually happening. But yeah, it's a hard thing to go through, but I think it does, like you said earlier, everything offers an opportunity, and I think it offers an opportunity to really help us appreciate our own actions and our own consciousness when we see someone who's had that taken from them, especially when we love them.
Yeah, you want to fix it and make it better, but you can't.
And similar to you, so your brother, my mom, I speak to my dad about it as best as I can. It's still something really painful for him because they separated not due to his cause, but due to her illness and her detaching from him. So he never stopped loving her and never wanted to end, but she sort of drove herself away and then was in homes and in and out of hospitals. But he was saying she wanted to be an author, and she wanted to be she used to like working with children, and she really wanted to write stuff for children. That was her passion. And he said she was so, like, up until sort of 25, she was like the perfect person to him. He said with absolutely no indications of any issues, right, just snowballed from there. And I think for whatever reasons, like heavy meds and all sorts, and it's just lots of people just not knowing what to do.
Right. Yeah, that's what we ran into, not knowing what was going on, because, he was in college. He was actually the salutatorian of the high school. You know, he was quite brilliant. And that's part of the sadness, too, is he knows, he still remembers his academics. And he, like, when can I go to work? But he can't. Mm. And then he started having seizures, grand mal seizures, and being injured from that, and then that caused more problems, and so he can't drive now, but he wants to drive, and it's just hard. He loves Death Valley, so we just took him, my mom and I help her with him, and we took him to Death Valley and spent the weekend there so he could explore. And he's a few years older than I am, so his health has incredibly decreased, so it's hard for him. But we went with my cousin, and my cousin hasn't seen him. They're the same age, hasn't seen him in years. So they had a great time, and he tried to keep up with my cousin, and it was really neat. So we tried to get him out there, but you can see it's harder for him. But
yeah, nice. Like you say, it's just being there when you can and doing what you can for them, really, to just, like you say, if you can get into nature. My mom always appreciated just taking her to a park or somewhere where there was trees and flowers, and that I could see she just was so comfortable there, especially when you spend a lot of time in a home or in a hospital.
Yes.
Similar to yourself being in a hospital in the cast and being thinking, I bet you couldn't wait to just get out and see some flowers or see a tree.
Go back to skiing and go, I was 16. I missed my friends. I wanted to go back and do that. Yeah, I don't like going to where he lives and seeing, it's not a comfortable place for me.
Yeah.
But we can't care for him at home. So, they have nurses and a structured environment for him, and they monitor, his health. And we just can't do those kinds of things just at home. So he needs to be where he is, but it is hard. It's very hard on the family.
Yeah, no, it's a difficult time. So it's a difficult thing, should I say, to process and to witness. It's the witnessing that's so hard.
Yes.
I'm curious to know how has your life been, sort of like your internal, your emotions and everything, as well as your external, during the pandemic, during the last 2 years, how has that affected you?
It Luckily, no one in my family, we just ended up getting COVID over Christmas, so we didn't get too sick. But actually, my brother's wife died from COVID, but she had some underlying conditions. And they set the home, actually, it got in the home. And so they both of them had it. My brother had it, but he had no symptoms. He's the person we thought if he got it, that he would pass away from it. He had no symptoms at all. He just tested positive. So they put him in a rehab center and we would go down and drive. It was over an hour, drive down there every day. And so my mom could see him. She saw him through the fence. And so that was really hard for her. But they actually separated my brother and his wife, and nobody knew where she was. And they finally tracked her down and told my mom that she had passed away like a month before that. So I had to call the hospital where she had been taken and backtrack where she was and what they had done with her. And they had cremated, or her family had already cremated her. And so we were able to do a very small service up at a camp up here. It was just my immediate family. My daughter came and her family. And it was actually really beautiful. It had a big, big window and we got to see the trees and it was snowing. So it was really nice. But that was traumatic for him and for us. But the rest of it, we did a lot of camping. I taught my students from home. And at first I thought, they can't do this. You know, they're hands-on. Yeah. They need tactile learning. And they actually did really well. The parents really stepped up and did everything they could to help their students. And going back was hard. You know, we started with just 2 days a week and then we just a couple hours a day. And then it's progressed. We're back full time. Actually, before, right after Christmas, we actually had a lot of our students and teachers ended up getting it in our little pod we have. And so we had to go back on distance learning for about a week and a half and just to clear it up a little bit. And so we've done really good. But what I did was I decided to put my energy, because I was putting a lot of energy into obviously teaching. And I was flying to Sacramento once a month. I help work on our standardized testing for our students. So we go up there, we create the questions, we analyze the answers. And, you know, I was doing that once a month. And I was also doing events with Story Monster in Arizona, which is 7 hours from me. So I was really tired. I thought, I can't keep this pace up. So the pandemic, I was actually in Sacramento when it hit. And we were up there with a bunch of teachers from all the districts all over. And they were closing their districts down. And we're like, what's going on? You know, we'd never been in a pandemic before. So yeah. I flew home. Went to work one day and didn't go back for they said it was 2 weeks, then it was 6 weeks, and it ended up being 18 months. But yeah. When we first left, we weren't allowed to go back and get our curriculum. So I took a trip to the dollar store and bought, you know, a bunch of things I could do from home, bought a new computer, and collected pine cones. And I sent the pine cones home with the peanut butter and the seeds, and we made bird feeders over our computers and all sorts of stuff to try to figure out, like, how are we going to do this? I had a hard time at first with not being able to send the things home that I wanted to, you know, because it couldn't contaminate things. And I had a hard time with that. But we did a lot of traveling around. It actually was nice. There wasn't hardly anybody on the roads when you went places. There wasn't anybody, you know, there wasn't all the people. Now you go and there's traffic and I'm like, where did they need to go back home now? You know, I actually like that.
Yeah. Because it's been a very stressful time for everyone. Like, it's just a very, like you said, it's something that's happened in pretty much everyone's lifetime that's never happened. Is anything you found that's kept you strong during this time? Is there anything that you do? Do you journal? Do you do anything that helps you to actually keep going during this time?
Yeah. My mom and I walked every day. We would go for a walk and, you know, up in the mountains, it was beautiful. And at times they closed the forest. So that was kind of hard, but we found places to walk. And we actually, my mom made this we had to walk so many times, and we got to take a trip to, she loves a place called Cayucos. It's on the beach in the, up the coast. And we would go there. That would be like our treat for making sure that we walked. And then I actually went to my daughter's, and she was going to be in a wedding. And I was driving my mom and my grandson to the wedding, and we actually got rear-ended. And so that kind of changed things. And we didn't walk after that for a long time, and kind of got us off our routine. But I also published 6 books. When I first started writing my books, I had a goal. I was going to do 1 a year. And then things happened. I got busy and I got kind of behind. So I thought, I'm going to catch up. So I actually am getting them out there. And I did one on Halama Beach. And actually, there's an experience in there. It wasn't in Halama Beach. We were in San Diego. And it was during the pandemic. And I had an occupational therapist who worked in my classroom. And she was from Maine. And so she was staying with me. We rented a house. And there's a red tide. And then at night, it turns blue and it glows. And I wanted to see it. I wanted to put it in my book. So I have to go do or see what's in my books. And so we went to this place, and there's cabins on the pier. And I took her and my grandson. And at that time, you couldn't even sit on the beach. They wouldn't let you sit. You had to keep moving when you went on the beach. So we were walking down the beach, and my grandson was swimming in the ocean beside us. And we were walking, and suddenly this huge jellyfish came up on shore. So she's dancing over the jellyfish, trying not to stand on it, you know, to step on it. It was actually really funny. So I'm like, okay, you're in my book now. So there is a page in my book of her dancing over the jellyfish, and my grandson's in the background. He's dancing in the ocean behind her. And so it was just a perfect opportunity to put something fun in one of the book I wrote about the beach. So
nice. And did she manage to dance and not get stung?
Yep, she did it. But it was funny. She was doing an Irish jig over the jellyfish, and it was big. It was big, but luckily she saw it when we were walking. But so we just adapted really well to what, you know, we needed to do, and just kept going out there as much as we could. And so I actually got a lot done during the pandemic. Got a lot of writing done, catching up, getting things published, doing a lot of interviews. So I just went in a kind of a different direction than what I was doing before it.
Oh, nice. And you said you got 13 books published now?
Yeah, my 13th one is on Tucson, Arizona. It's this beautiful bed and breakfast that I started going to. When I first started publishing, I would go to the University of Arizona. They have a huge book festival. There's like 10,000 people that go there. And so I would go there. I had a friend who actually worked at the university, and I would go visit him and his wife. And we stayed in this Hacienda Linda. It's beautiful. So we made it he and I just wrote this book. He loves the desert. Me, not so much, but he does. So we wrote a book on the Hacienda Linda, and she's one of the main characters. And we're waiting for it to come out, hopefully any day now. It's been taking a little longer than I thought. And he and I are going to write a book on Death Valley. His grandmother went to Death Valley almost 100 years ago. And she wrote a journal on the stationery from the inn that was there. And so I've been back twice to research it, take some pictures and things for the illustrations. And we're going to follow her grandmother's journey and our journey 100 years later. And so I think it's going to be a really interesting book.
Oh, nice. And you said all your books are children's books?
Yes, yes. Pre-K to 6th or 7th grade.
Okay, because you said you work with people with cognitive issues. Are they directed towards them or for all children?
No, they're for all children. But my students are in my books. I have autism and Rett syndrome, Down syndrome, cerebral palsy, multiple sclerosis. I have visual impairments, hearing impairments. Just my books are formatted and they're repetitious. So they have the same format. Every month is a new month with a new friend with a new subject. And then there are 7 facts about that subject, 1 for each day of the week. And the reason they're formatted like that is because there's a lot of educational information in them about geography and history wherever I'm at. And so a child could read the book and find out about a shark. I went swimming with the sharks in Oahu. So there would be a shark on there. And if they liked that page, they could go get more information about sharks or alligators or plantations. And they're really good for children who, or even adults who, I have a teacher in Washington who uses them. He teaches refugees from Somalia English and how to work in a factory. And he uses my books. The whole families use my books to learn English. And they're used in classrooms in Africa because of the repetition. And for children who have learning disabilities, it's easier for them to learn how to read.
Oh, that works well. And it's nice that you've, like you said, you've included the real characters, real people with real ailments and issues in their life, because it gives them a reference point as well. Because lots of people, whether it's race or anything, like, you often hear people saying, oh, like, they didn't have anything that reflected anything that they could relate to. So when you've got such diversity, I imagine that's so enlightening for all the children that you do work with and children that don't have issues, to hear stories from their perspective and just have them included in their world, in their imagination.
Yeah, I don't. People ask me, am I going to write a book about disabilities? And no, I don't want to do that. The children are just one of the 12 people that are in my book, and they're all doing something in their lives. I have my one little boy, he has autism. He's at the Volcanic National Park with his dad, and he is nonverbal. So he has a communication device. So he's teaching the queen about his communication device and how to use it. And so if a child's reading the story, they know if they see someone with this phone or iPad and they're using it, they're not playing games, they're using it to communicate. So yeah. I have the little girl, she has Rett syndrome, and she's making leis for her classmates. And she's in Hawaii, so she's making the beautiful leis. And her mom's helping her. So her mom's explaining to the queen what Rett syndrome is and why she has to help her. But this little girl is living her life. She's making beautiful flowers. She has friends and classmates. And so I want everyone to remember that someone that has a disability is a person. They're a person first. And they have
They're not their condition. Yeah.
Yeah. So that's what I like doing.
Yeah, it's nice. And like you say, and with technology now, it's interesting you say it's communicating with something that looks like is it through a phone?
They can use the communication devices, their apps, so they can get them on their phone. We use iPads. They use all sorts of different devices for that.
Oh, okay, yeah. If a child sees someone, they're just going to assume like they're just playing on a phone.
Yeah, you know, why do they get to play games and stuff at school and I don't? Or if a child's trying to use it in the community to like order food or something, the person doesn't know, they need to look at this communication device to know what the child's trying to tell them. I mean, it talks, it speaks. But, you know, a lot of times we take our children out into my students out. I work with 12 to 22-year-olds out in the community a lot. And people don't know, they look at us, you know, instead of the child. And so we try to refer back to the child. What would you like? Tell them what you would like, you know? And so we kind of teach the children and the public, you know, how to work with everyone.
Sort of bridging that gap. No, it's fascinating because I actually spoke to, I use an app called Green Room, which is like an online audio. You can do podcasts on there, but it's a live talk instantly around the world and have a little conversation. And I was talking to these two young girls and they're having a conversation. And then this like robot voice was interrupting and talking. And then they apologize and they go, oh, sorry, we're both blind. And that's our phone app telling us what to do. Like, and I was fascinated because I've never spoke to a blind person before. And I was like, oh, I didn't realize you both blind. And like, yeah, that's how they met on some, they know each other through the sort of school they go to, and they was on a chat and anyone can jump in. So I just jumped in to have a chat and we were just talking about that. And fascinating, the use of technology and the speed they listened to was incredible. I was like, they played me a sort of example of how they use it, and the sort of voice on the phone was going really fast. I couldn't keep up. It's like swipe up, wait for vibration, swipe right, wait for vibration. It's like all the things, and they said it to such a speed, and it just fascinated me how they could use technology to aid their life and connect with people. Like, they were so happy to connect with someone across the world. They were both in California as well, and they were fascinated to connect with me in Europe because they'd never spoke to someone in Europe before.
Well, yeah, see, it's fascinating to do all this. And it's like you're right here, you know, and you're all the way on the other side of the world. So it's a good thing. You know, sometimes it's a bad thing, you know, but it's really good that we can all just connect and how much we all have in common, really. And, you know, that you're able to speak to someone who has a disability and they're just, and you learn how curious they are and how adventuresome they can be. And, you know, they've really adapted to this technology, and that's why it's going so fast, because that's what they use it every day, all day long.
Yeah. Yeah. I was asking them all sorts of questions because I was just fascinated. I was like, so what was it like when you was a child? How did you play with toys? Because for me, like with sight, when I was a child,
yeah,
and the shapes, it's like the first thing you sort of notice it. And they were like, no, it's about the textures and the noise it makes when they touch things together. They said texture and noise was what a toy was all about. And then they were telling me about their favorite toys that they had, and they said just the feelings they got from the texture or the sound it made when they banged it against something. And they said that's what was incredible for them. So I found it really interesting.
Did you have them on your podcast?
No, this was just on a live conversation.
Oh, but you should have them on your podcast.
Yeah, though. I'm going to try and find them and reach out. I was trying to look for them, but they've got like people put up whatever their sort of, you know, like their name is on the app.
Oh,
and that
yeah.
name doesn't exist. I've Googled it and I couldn't find them because it's not their actual name. Or so
yeah.
Maybe I'll find them on that app again one day.
So did they tell you what school they were in or exactly where they
no.
were?
No. Again, I try not to ask too personal details, yeah. just because, you know, you don't want people sharing too much online. Yeah. But yeah, I just knew they was from California. And that was all. We're getting near to the end of the show. But can you just share for the listeners, like, where can they find your books? Where's the best place to find you and any links that you have?
I have a website, Dr. Dawn Menge. I have a publisher, Rushmore Press. My books can be found on Amazon, Barnes & Noble. You can just Google my name or Queen Vernita's Visitors and they will come up. My Facebook is Dawn Menge 1. Instagram is Dawn Menge. And my Twitter is Queen Vernita. And if you're interested in purchasing any of the books and you're not sure because they are pre-K to 7th grade, which book would be best for the grade level of your child, just send me a note and I'll let you know which ones would be appropriate. And I have them on... I have two on Hawaii, one on New Orleans, where we hold a baby alligator. There's one on Baja, Mexico. I wrote one with my brother, who's an astronomer. So there's one on astronomy, a paddle boat trip, the train ride. I have one on Alaska. And I also have another book that's not part of the series, and it's called Dragon's Breath.
Oh, nice. I'll make sure to keep all the links in the description. So if anyone's listening, they want to find out, go to the description and you can follow through to the links. It's been beautiful chatting to you. I could chat to you for a lot longer. I have just a few short, quick, fun questions I ask every guest. Have you got time for them?
Yes.
Yeah. Can I just ask you, if you was to choose one, cat or a dog?
Dog. I'm allergic to cats.
Okay, that makes it easier. And what's your favorite color?
Green.
Nice. What excites you? What motivates you?
Well, at work, it's my students accomplishing something and telling me they don't need me. my family, traveling, love.
Nice. And what does the opposite? What turns you off?
Liars. Yeah. Basically, that's people who are intentionally mean or cruel.
Okay. What noise do you love?
My grandchildren laughing.
Oh, beautiful. What sound or noise do you not love so much?
I don't know. A car honking?
Well, you know, I've had two guests from California, and both of them leaf blowers, and I don't know if that's a Californian thing or a city thing in California, but I don't know if I've really even heard a leaf blower before, but that was there really gets them frustrated.
Oh, they're really loud. We don't have them in Wrightwood. I've lived other places where they have them. They are loud.
Yeah. What do you love about yourself?
My family. We wouldn't be so close if I had raised them differently. So my children and my grandchildren and just having a close family.
Awesome. What do you love to see in others?
Kindness. I love to see their eyes light up when they learn something new or when they see something new. I love that they learn about themselves and how wonderful the world really is.
Oh, nice. And last question, what do you love about animals? This can be pets or animals in nature when you witness them when you're out camping.
They're just fascinating. All animals are. I love to learn about wherever I'm at. You know, sometimes people think that you shouldn't be in their environment and you are taken away from their home. But how do we know we need to preserve them or conserve their environment if we don't know who they are? I had a discussion with someone about the animals like that are in SeaWorld. But as an educator, if my students don't know what a dolphin looks like or what it feels like, they don't know they need to take care of the dolphin.
Yeah, and I think, as like I said, it brings an appreciation to the vastness and beauty of life. And there's so many places, like a lot of places have some exotic animals, but for the most part, most of them have actually been rescued. You know, it's normally that they've been illegally traded or they've been found injured and then trying to rehab them. You know, and it's a great opportunity to see something you would never see on a hike or on the way out, especially. And I've seen one, there was actually, I don't know if you've seen it, it's a film I watched called Dolphin Tale, and it was about a dolphin that had it was injured by, I think, a boat, and it had its tail cut off, but it became like an inspiration. It was like a true story, and it became an inspiration to people that had limbs missing, and all sorts of people with disabilities would travel across the world to see this dolphin. And lots of kids that couldn't speak and had disorders was just lit up.
They got a connection to it. We actually took our students to SeaWorld, and they went swimming with the dolphins.
Oh, beautiful.
Yeah, and all their parents came, and it was a fascinating experience. And so they really connect, our students connect with animals, horses, dogs, you know, they use a lot of service animals. So there's a really tight connection.
Nice. Is there anything else you would like to share with the guests, or is there anything you'd like to say before we go?
Just go out there and love your life and live your best life and have adventures every day.
Thank you so much. Thank you again for being part of the show. I hope you enjoyed it. It was beautiful to connect with you and just hear someone else's life and journey.
Well, thank you for having me.
Absolutely no problem. I look forward to going and checking out your books and sharing it with the world.
Well, thank you. And thank you for having me, and enjoy your adventures.
I will do. I have one personal question. This will probably be on the podcast too. You said you have, you mentioned your publisher in it. Are they a children's sort of book only publisher?
No. Now they publish adult books and children's books. And they actually have one of the authors. I actually just watched the movie because I looked her up. But she wrote a book about a man who ended up murdering his family. It's called American Murder. And she's one of the authors that's connected. And it's on Netflix, connected to my publisher.
Okay, interesting. Yeah, no, I was just curious. Apologies if you can hear some dogs barking. I'm out by a little river at the moment. Someone's come to walk their dog, and it sounds like he's very excited to go for a walk. because I'm working on sort of two books. One's only in the idea phase because I'm trying to concentrate on the other one. But you know, when you get an idea pop in, you sort of try not to get distracted by that sometimes, because I've got two completely opposite books I'm working on. One's like my own personal sort of book about suicide and what that's like and how to sort of help other people that are dealing with someone with that issue or going through that issue themselves. And the other one's actually like a children's book based on one of my cats, because I live in a van, like I said, but I also have five cats and a dog. And I wanted to do a little story about my cats, just because I think it'd be nice for children to share and hear their journey and their life. But we last 2 weeks ago, we got one of our cats back for a year and a half. Then they was all born in the van, four of them. We've got the mother and her four children.
Oh my gosh. It must be very crowded.
Yeah, no, but they're out all the time. One of the cats is right near me now. We have them outdoors, free range all day long, and we whistle and they come in and go to sleep.
Wow.
One day when I finally finishing, I was ready to put it out, maybe I can look up publisher.
Yeah. Just send them your manuscript and then they'll let you know. It's a hybrid publisher, so It's not the same as like self-publishing. It's kind of in the middle between self-publishing and traditional publishing.
Okay, interesting. Yeah, I've just been learning this all in the last sort of 6 months since I've started. And yeah, the self-publishing sort of side is quite a new thing that's growing fast. But I do like the traditional side of publishing. So yeah, hybrid ones, that's very interesting.
Yeah, well, good luck on your stories and your adventures.
Okay. Thanks again. Have a beautiful day. I know it's early in the morning still for you, so you've got the whole day ahead of you.
Yes. Thank you.
Hey, thank you. Take care. And thanks again.
You too. Bye-bye.
All right, bye.
Thank you so much for being here and listening to The Selfish Podcast. I'm your host, Luke Greenheart, and I appreciate you being here. Don't forget to check out my YouTube channel. Just search Luke Greenheart on YouTube. You'll find me. Check out my website, lukegreenheart.com. Have an amazing day, and stay tuned for more episodes. I'll be interviewing guests on their path of self-development, their path to self, getting to know them in much more intimacy, much more depth, sharing and connecting with all so we can have a much more blissful, joyful, and productive life together. All right, much love. Have a great day.